The Production Expert Podcast with James Ivy, Julian Rogers, and Dan Cooper.
Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Production Expert Podcast number 390. It's the 16th of October, 2019. My name's James Ivy.
I'm Julian Rogers.
And I'm Dan Cooper.
Dan, tell us about this month's deals, if you would, sir.
Yeah, a couple of good deals here. So our featured deals this month are from Tegla Audio Manufacture and from Sonox.
Now, at this point, I have to say, ting.
Ting, that's it. What was it? Bingo, wasn't it? No, drinking game. Drinking
game. Didn't take long, did it?
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm going to be saying this a few more times, so...
Students,
get your glass,
there you go.
Get your glass ready. Yeah, yeah. So Tegla is offering the Production Expert community £200 off the purchase price of either their Tube Roundsight Reverb hardware unit or Schwerecraft Multimode Verimu hardware tube compressor unit. And Sonox are offering a special intro price on their amazing new Oxford Drum Gate plugin. Get a 25% discount on this intelligent gate. No more of the unreliable results you get when using traditional tools to gate drums like chatter, misdetection, chokes, or lost ghost notes. Just clean, spill-free drums. We also have some great deals from our partners like Avid, Perfect Surround, Synchro Arts, and Editor's Keys on our deals page.
Thank you very much, sir. It is time to move on to our talking points, and these are sponsored by Arturia.
Hello experts and listeners, Pro Tools Expert Talking Points is brought to you with the support of Arturia.
The Arturia AudioFuse 8 Pre is a dual mode interface and ADAT expander which boasts 8 channels of premium analog audio, rock solid sync, USB-C and optical connectivity. The Super Low Equivalent Input Noise, or EIN as it's known, lets you capture every subtle detail, while the huge input gain will drive even the most demanding low output mics. With 8 world-class mic preamps and the addition of the included AudioFuse Creative Suite software bundle, which includes Arturia's preamps, a compressor, filter, delay and more, it's a perfect high-quality interface and expander for the professional studio. You can find out more about the AudioFuse 8 Pre at the link in the show notes.
I am going to preface tonight's talking point, or certainly our first talking point, with a moment of minor celebration last week. Friend of ours, friend of the blog, Dave West, at Studio Spares, put a link up to a studio in Hemel Hempstead, that's sort of north of London on the M1, who were having a bit of a sell-off, a sell-off of some toys. And I looked down the list and I went, ooh, there's some, you know, some, a lot of live gear, some drums. Clearly, they've been a place where bands go to record, and it's all sort of Marshalls and 4x12s and big amps and stuff like that. And then down the list was an amp that I sold about 20 years ago. And it was one of those moments of, oh, why did I sell that? I know why I sold it at the time, because I needed the money. But there it was, bold as brass, up online for 300 of your finest English pounds. So I'm very pleased to say that I now have back in my studio a JCM 900, the 50-watt 2x12 combo, just the greatest rock and roll amp other than a JCM 800, which again is another one of those moments of why did I sell that? So this talking point is, what piece of audio equipment slash gear have you sold and instantly regretted? Hashtag seller's remorse.
Love it. I'll pick up that hashtag straight away. And it's going to be a guitar amp as well. So many, many years ago when I started getting into the electric guitar, my dad had an old amp in the garage, and it was given to him by a friend of his who was once a roadie for Status Quo. And this thing was knackered, you know, buried in the corner of a garage. It had a bird's nest in it. It looked rotten, but I was interested in the guitar at that time. I said, Dad, let's get this out of the garage. I want to play with this massive amp that you've got. We pulled it out, really heavy, and it's an old Selma Zodiac Twin 30. Oh my God.
Wow. But you
know, I was about 14 at the time. So that meant nothing to me. It was just the size and the fact it had this little green light in it that flickers and it was really loud. And I sort of fell in love with it, but I started gigging about a year after that. This amp was
not with that amp.
No, impractical. No way. And my dad didn't have a lot of money at the time. He said, well, why don't we sell this and get you something like a Fender amp or something like that? You can easily just pick up one hand and throw it in the back of a van. Yeah, cool. Let's do that. And we sold this online to a company that buys old amps and restores them, whatever. And they offered us 300 quid for it because it was in pretty poor condition. It had the, I don't know if anyone knows these amps, it got like the crocodile skin effects on them. They look beautiful. And yeah, we sold it for 300 quid or something like that. Got myself an amp for 300 quid. And a few years later, I was in a shop in Denmark Street and I swear it was the same amp because I recognised the bits of damage on it. Over £1,200.
Yeah. Whoops. Yep, I had a funny feeling you're going to say that.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm looking at one now on eBay. Yeah, £1,200. It's in piss poor condition, but oh my God, how I regret selling that. And, you know, I'm an AC30 man. You know, I've had a few of those and I love my valve amps. I really, really wish I kept this. But, you know, at the time I needed a practical amp for gigging, it was always going to go. I mean, the fact it was in my dad's garage for like 15 years not being used, I'm surprised it even turned on, you know? But yeah, I do regret not being a bit wiser or not getting it out of the garage when I was 14 and, you know, flogging it, maybe pulling it out when I was in my later teens when I appreciated what this was. So yeah, I do regret that. Who knows, I might buy one again in the future when I've, you know, got a bit more money. Who knows? Who knows? I could be my midlife crisis purchase.
Well, it's not going to be a sports car, is it, Dan? So
no, it's not because I don't drive. No, but that's it. That's my midlife crisis planned. An old Selma Zodiac.
I've got a funny story that's quite similar to that of an unnamed veteran guitarist who sort of friend of a friend, but it's been around forever. Arrived at a practice with a friend of mine who's in a band with him with a new amp, and it was. I don't know what, I think it might have been a Laney, but it was kind of like a very kind of like, yeah, it was a modern compact little, you know, perfectly good, probably, I don't know, maybe it was even a modelling amp. It doesn't really matter. But the point is he turned up looking ever so pleased himself, popped it down, said to the guy, said, look, new amp. Hey, new amp. And they're going, oh, very nice. Yeah, great. So what, you didn't want to bring the old amp with it? And I said, no. So what did you do with it? Because that was a nice, that was like a 60s AC30 with the, you know, with the blast speakers and the da 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 da. And I said, oh yeah, part exchanged it. I only had to pay 100 quid for this. And it's like, oh dear.
Oh, God.
And this is a little bit like, it's people who were around at the time don't value the stuff, old stuff, vintage gear, in the same way that people who've come to it with that stuff always having been unavailable. Perfect example, I remember watching a thing of, what's the guy's name? It's Ray Manzarek, isn't it? The keyboard player in The Doors.
Yes.
Yeah, him. And he was, I remember seeing a video of him playing some stuff, and he was sat in his room and he'd got kind of like, you know, he'd got kind of like the, you know, a Rhodes behind him, like probably a bit old piano bass or something. And he got various other kind of, you know, probably a Whirly and some nice vintage electromechanical keyboards. And he was playing, I don't know what, like sort of like, I don't know, Yamaha Motif or some sort of like modern digital thing. And he was playing that in preference to the other things. Oh yeah, just talking about the parts he played. And I was watching it with a friend saying, why aren't you playing the real deal? And it's like, yeah, you know, he grew up with those things and probably takes them a little bit more for granted than we do. And what's more, it's like, well, this is in perfect condition and it plays in tune and it hasn't got all the annoying thunky thing and the key bed's consistent, unlike most Rhodes I've ever played. And all that kind of stuff, you know. It's, yeah, it's a funny one.
And the cameraman hasn't got to set up a completely new shot every time you change pack.
Quite possibly. Quite possibly. But it, you know what I mean? It's that kind of thing of sort of like, you know, how you value stuff. And I mean, certainly I know that because going down Denmark Street, I don't go often, but I've seen some stuff that I just think, well, that's tat. I wouldn't use it, you know. And it's, you know, oh, look at this. This is a 90s Strat. And you're going, So it's a modern one, but you're going, no, it's not. It's 20 years old. And if you're talking to someone who's 20, that's kind of old. And it doesn't apply in the same way as it does to stuff with 60s dust on it. But, you know, it's on the subject of which, your Selma story, Dan.
Yes.
When I was, let's put a year on this, 1985, maybe 1984, 1985, sometime like that. Teenage, in a metal band with my mates. all wanting to grow long hair but weren't allowed to because my mum said not. That kind of deal, you know? And, yeah, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, you're like 14, you know? It's like, yes. And we, off someone who somebody went to school with, bought an amp because we needed an amp for kind of like the vocals and stuff. And the cab was a hilarious homemade thing that we called the washing machine because it looked like one because it was made out of white Formica chipboard screwed together with a big hole cut in it. Anyway, it was rubbish. And this old amp that he'd got off his dad. And yeah, it was a mid-60s Selmer treble and bass, 50-watt valve head, you know, and it was, we took it completely for granted. The thing that's terrifying about this is that that was a 20-year-old amp at the time. And I'm thinking, okay, and a 20-year-old amp now would be one from 1999.
That's quite scary, isn't it? Yes.
That's an uncomfortable thought. But yeah, anyway, but 20 years ago, when I was 14, 20 years ago, was an unimaginable length of time, and this thing was as old as the hills. The valve thing didn't mean anything to me, really. And at some point, somebody spilled a cup of tea down the back of it, and we just thought, oh, it's broken, and it went away.
All sorts of funny colour lights came out of it.
Yeah. You know, and that is literally what happened, you know. But anyway, it lived through some teenagers' adolescence and survived, so that's pretty good, really. But the thing that I found out was I was talking to a mate of mine who wasn't even in that band, so I don't know how this happened. But and this is, you know, 25 years later. He said, you remember that old treble and bass? I said, yeah. I said, I've got it in my garage. I went, no way. And he's no fool. He knows that's worth some money now. You know, I mean, I think the going rate for one of them is probably about $850, something like that, if it's in nice. Sort of half decent nick. There was nothing wrong with the thing. He said he got a new valve, stuck it in, it was fine.
It was Selmers and garages, eh?
Well, maybe. And there's old WEM column speakers and stuff. And that's another kind of amp that never dies. Is it my turn? I've been talking for ages, yes. So I won't do one.
Go
yet.
For
I
don't it.
Know. Go off, you regretted.
Okay, because that wasn't one of mine, because I don't have it and it was never mine to sell, but it is an old thing. What I think we're going to notice, actually, is that I think we're all probably going to be talking about instruments more than.
Do you know what? I was
gear.
About to say, it's become very guitar-y, this podcast.
Well, this is just it, but this is like that question of, like, you know, studio's on fire. What do you run in and get? And for me.
Fire extinguisher.
Good answer. if you could rescue one thing, let's reframe the question. Yeah, and you can talk about, you know, hard drives and yada yada. It depends what's on the hard drive ultimately, end of the day. But emotionally, what I want to say is I'd get my acoustic guitar.
Yes. Yeah. Likewise.
Just because, kind of like, even an electric guitar, you know, they're all pretty much the same. Way more than, like, you know, an old guitar that you've had for a long time. It's unique, and you'll certainly never get another one. Haven't sold that though, so that's not on the list. I really want to say my first bass, which I don't even know what it was. It was an incredibly heavy ash-bodied P that. I don't know. I remember it had quite an odd neck with sort of like it was more than one piece and it had some flame to the a maple in the neck and stuff. But I sold it to a guy. I could probably track the guy down. Apparently it was hanging on his wall for a long time. But I would love to get that back. But I think the chances of that are extremely remote. But considering I don't know what it is, it's not much of a story. But coming back one from guitars, I'm going to say my story I usually say about things that I sold that I shouldn't have is I sold a Juno 106 a Juno 106, isn't that unusual? And I could get another one and the prices have gone up a lot, but not life-changing amounts of money, you know? And I sold it to this guy at the time when a going rate for one of those was about $350. I sold it to him a little bit cheap. I don't know why, because he had plenty of money. He could have afforded $350. It's probably worth, I don't know, it's probably worth a grand now. It was a nice one. It was a very good nick. But then again, if I want a Juno 106, actually, I've tried the Roland Cloud instruments and it's absolutely spot on. So if anyone wants to tell you, hey, it's not like the real thing, that's exactly like the real thing. So, you know, I'd have no worries about that. Actually, I went to a gig at the weekend. A friend of mine playing in a little pub gig, very very small thing, but he wanted me to come and just kind of, you know, sort the sound out because he's not technical like that. It couldn't have been simpler, really. A little notepad mixer and a couple of speakers, two of them, whatever. But I really thought, for the first time since I gave it to my nephew, I thought, I'll tell you what, I wish I still had my TC M350, little 1U kind of effects reverb rack mount thing, just because it was a little analog notepad mixer, had the built-in effects, nasty. And I just thought, actually, if I could just turn up with one thing, just kind of, I was walking to the gig, it'd be that, and I'd plumb that in, and that would transform more than anything else. So, you know, that's actually the thing I've most recently went, why did I give that away? But, yeah, so that's probably mine, a TC Electronic M350 that I said, I'm never going to use that again. And, yeah, it's been a couple of years, but, yeah, I would have used it again if I'd had it this weekend.
Hmm, James, now I can only imagine that your seller's history in your eBay account is quite sizable.
It's extensive, to be honest.
Yes. Out of all of that selling, what else do you regret?
I hadn't even thought to look down that list. That would be a very scary, scary place. I mean, selling my JCM800 was definitely a moment of stupidity, but I know why I did it, and it was to buy my Chandler JV19T.
I remember you doing a video on it.
Yeah.
I remember you sending it off quite literally going, I'm selling this amp, may as well do a video.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those amps that I will get again. Now I've got, now I've got some space. Well, there's a joke. Likewise, now I've got some money. Another joke. The one that always springs to mind, though, and it's not a terribly valuable thing, and I'm sure I could find them again, is I had a Hardware Sansamp PSA-1. Which we all know from being Sansamp, the plugin, in the free plugin inside Pro Tools. But I really, really dug into that thing and got some really good guitar sounds out of it. To the point where people say, you know, what are you using for processing? What's your guitar amp? And I was like, oh, it's a PSA-1. They're like, what? They sound fizzy and horrible and nasty, don't they? I'm like, well, clearly not, because you think it sounds like quite a nice guitar amp. They were a bizarre thing, but I really, really liked it. But I was reminded when I went round to collect the new Marshall from last week, the JCM 900, was the chap, Alex, showed me the other stuff he had, and he had a couple of drum kits and bits and pieces and some studio stuff. Sort of, you know, reasonable Behringer kit, sort of some live PA speakers, nothing, you know, nothing that I was desperate to get my hands on. He had a few microphones and bits and pieces, but nothing that really smacked of, wow, vintage. And then in the corridor was his live gear, guitar player. So he had four 4x12s with heads and stuff, and he had a little Fender Vibrachamp little combo. I think they had a 5-inch speaker in them. And when I was at, oh God, I must have been 12 or 13... I was given a not Fender, but a P-Bass style bass and this little Vibrachamp combo amp. And I remember, because, you know, everyone needed an amp in the band, and I remember thinking, oh, I've got this thing, I don't use it. I'll sell it to our keyboard player for £25. If you can find one now on eBay, they are best part of £1,800-1,900. And he had one, and I went, oh, how much is that? And he went, no, it's not for sale, mate. No, that's my rig. No. And it was very clear that was not for sale. But yeah, I agree with Julian. I mean, it's all the electronic stuff can be replaced relatively easily. As much as, like, you know, I love the console and I love all my speakers, my outboard, that sort of thing. That's all fairly easily replaced. Instruments, however...
We make bonds with instruments. Do you know what I mean? There's something about it. You know, you can sit with an electric guitar or your P bass or your acoustic guitar, piano, drum kit, whatever, for hours. You know what I mean? Hours playing these things with your hands and that energy that sort of floats around all of that. With gear, it's kind of like, that's, let's say, a preamp I've got in my rack. That's a good preamp, but I know there's a better one out there, so I won't miss that if I get rid of that and I get something better. You know, you evolve your gear collection. But with instruments, it's not really an evolutionary thing. You get a new guitar or another instrument because it gives you something different. It's hard to describe. Like the guitar I love the most in my collection, and me and my wife together, we've got like something like 20, 25 guitars. I've lost count. We had a lot more once upon a time. But the guitar I love using the most, and you'll probably see me using it a lot in my videos, is my black Fender Thinline. It's a Mex. It cost me £400 used. And I've had lots of other guitars that cost a lot more than that, and they're also lovely to play, but that's my workhorse. If the studio's on fire, I would grab that and possibly try to push a quiet upright piano out the door as well. But it's that, and it's something about instruments. It doesn't matter, I don't think, how much it costs or if other people think it's shit. It's what you think of it and it's how you feel about it. But gear is something that you can just swap over, change. Sometimes we have to change our gear because technology tells us to change that gear. You know what I'm saying? So like a control surface I absolutely adore and I never sold because I knew I'd regret it. It's the mighty 003. I kept it in the garage and then I dug it back out when my wife needed some more studio gear. I thought, there's no point buying anything. Use this. This is a great piece of gear. It's everything you need to work. And, you know, if we couldn't use that anymore because it'd be the FireWire on the back. You know, we buy a new computer, it hasn't got that, or drivers or whatever. So you buy new gear, but with instruments, as I said, it's a bond, you know? And it can take you back. It's a memory, like Julian, you were saying about your P-Bass. You're going, I don't really remember really what it was. It probably wasn't very good, but I remember that as a good instrument and I miss it and I'd like it back one day. And you'd probably get it back, to say, tomorrow and you'd go, this is crap. But
what I'd like to know about that P-Bass is whether or not it was crap, just because I didn't really have anything to compare it. You know, it'd be I remember it was heavy, but beyond that.
Yeah. So, Dan, tell us about another one of your... seller's remorse type moments.
All right, I'm gonna go gear actually this time. So I'm gonna it's gonna be my Yamaha NS10s. Whoops. So I bought these 2012, I believe. 2011, 2012, and I got them off eBay for £200.
Wow.
Not bad, and they weren't in bad condition. The bottoms of them look a bit rotten, but everything else didn't work fine. Got a good amp with them. And used them for years alongside my Big Adams. So I worked a lot on the NS10s. They're all right. And we all know what they can help us with, balancing vocals and all that sort of stuff. But I had to sell them because when I moved studio, I moved into a very small room at the end of my garden. And I just could not have two sets of monitors set up how I wanted to. And I used to put the NS10s on top of the Adams, but it just didn't work. I couldn't get them to fire right at my head. And they sounded really, really bad. So I thought, there's no point putting these in the loft. I don't know when I'm going to have another recording space. I had no idea at the time I was going to move house and no idea I was going to build a larger studio in a few years. So I sold them. I doubled my money, mind, which wasn't bad. But I think they're still sort of going for £400 or £500. Fairly decent examples. So I kind of regret that. I mean, I know if I bought another set back, I'm not really losing any money, if you know what I mean. But I do regret that, and I'm not sure, if £500 for these is good value for money now. But who knows? Who knows? I remember them being good, and I remember using them a lot. I do regret selling them. I do sort of wish I'd left them in the loft.
A proper set of NS10s, and I do mean a proper set, rather than the...
these clony things coming out.
The reissues. There's a politically correct way of saying it.
Tributes.
The tributes. Yes. Yeah. You know, a proper set of NS10s, I've done a lot of good work on NS10s, and you can say what you like about them. You know what you're going to get. And I think there's an awful lot of studio kit where it might not be the best thing out there, but you know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
And you can work with that. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. Julian, any more in the regret locker?
Well, sort of. I mean, something that occurs to me is that perhaps the reason why we're not valuing our recording gear as much as maybe some people might imagine we would. It's just because our recording gear none of us are at that level where we've got gear that's actually irreplaceable. If we had an old EMI desk and we sold it, then you're probably going to struggle to get another. If you had a Fairchild and you sold it, you're probably going to struggle to buy a replacement. Yeah, frankly, but with the gear that we've got, it's good enough to do the job, but it's not that level of gear, you know. So there are some people I'm sure who can have very different, and also provenance stuff as well. So you know, it depends what you've got. I mean, if you've got really deep pockets, yeah, you can buy a U47. You can find them, but if you've got I don't know the Frank, well, I mean, it's not that it's for sale or even available, but if you've got Frank's one from Capital, apparently there are a few, you know, that's something slightly different, you know, and we all know how these things affect the values of things. Yeah, I mean, just look at the Gilmour guitar sale. Yeah. To see exactly how much you can get for a Stratocaster if it's the right one. So, but I don't know, stuff, I mean, yeah, I don't have as high a turnover rate as perhaps James does. So I've got less stuff to choose from, because basically most of the gear that I've bought, I don't buy that much and I don't tend to get rid of it either. But actually something that I kind of let go possibly too easily was another synthesizer, actually, a Roland SH-1000, which most people have never heard of. But it
I know what one of those is.
Do you? Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'd be impressed if it's the right one. With kind of like organ tabs along the front, brightly coloured organ tabs. Okay. That was the first Japanese synth available, certainly in Europe. It was 1972. It's not. There are other ones that are better known, certainly other ones with the SH series that are much better known. But this one was the very first one. And the reason why no one's heard of it is, I mean, okay, it was very old. It probably didn't sell in huge numbers. I just happened to buy it when I was a kid and knew nothing about synthesizers. And I went, oh, I want a synth. Oh, I'll buy that one. And it was because when eBay was not a thing, yeah, in the sort of like, you know, early to mid 80s. No, this was in, what was those shops called you used to get secondhand? Exchange and Mart.
Oh, blimey, remember that? Yeah.
And I walked in and I went, this is brilliant. I must have this, because I made it make a resonant, sweepy, sort of thippy whoop sort of sound and went, that's awesome. And it wasn't awesome at all. The reason why no one's heard of a Roland SH-1000 is because it's terrible. I mean, it is an awful synthesizer. It makes very few good noises. It's quite good at non-pitch sounds, actually, which is, you know. But, it looked kind of cool and vintage. And a guy that I was working with at the time, he kind of liked it. Not to use, actually. he used to use an SH-09 quite a lot, actually, which is a much better synth, frankly. But this thing, it looked cool, and he took some photos of it and used it on an album cover, I think. And I left it, and I just never went back for it. I just abandoned it. So, I don't know where that is now. But, so my Roland SH-1000, it would be interesting just because it's so old and such a sort of formative thing. But I also, at the same time, know that it was an absolute dog of a synthesizer. And, But then again, there are people out there who are really paying attention to these things, because the nice synthesizers from those days really aren't available anymore, aren't available at a reasonable cost. So, you know, if you want a VCS3, then good luck finding one. And then if you do find one, good luck affording it. But if you want, you know, a genuine analog synth from the 70s, you can probably have one of those. You can probably pay a couple of hundred quid for it. So, you know what I mean? But don't blame me if you don't like the results. So, don't know if I'd give it house room, frankly, but it is definitely something that I could shout out.
Do you know what I sold earlier this year? And I don't regret it, because this story has a bit of a twist. It's interesting. A big unexpected bill came into the family, had to cover it, didn't quite have the money for it. So I thought, okay, what I've got to do is sell my prize guitar, and that's my 1985 Fender Telecaster, the Rosewood George Harrison one, first reissue. That is probably one of my guitar babies, but it's worth a lot of money and I had to move it on very quickly. So up on Gumtree, a lot of interest and a lot of people trying to bid me on it. And I'm like, no. I want that amount for it. That's what it's worth. Great condition. So a guy comes round, elderly guy, I think he's in his 60s. Not elderly. And he comes round. I take it out and I give him the guitar. I said, do you want to plug it into the AC30? Have a go. He goes, no, I'm not a guitarist. Huh? What are you buying it for? And he went, I collect Beatles memorabilia. I've got a little shrine at home with Rickenbackers and posters and vinyls and all that sort of stuff. He showed me a picture. It's wicked. So I thought, I want to come around and see this. But I'm just going to add this to my collection. But if you want to buy it back of me in like a year or two, just give me a ring. I'll just sell it back to you for what I bought it for.
Oh, well, that's always handy, isn't it?
Oh, okay. So that's always on the back of my mind. If a bit of extra money comes back in, I will buy that back. So I regret sending it, but I don't at the same time, because I know there's a little option for me to get that back, even if I do give him an extra bit of money for it. You know, I get my guitar back. Brilliant.
That's quite a puzzling proposition. It's puzzling. Actually, it's that's quite odd.
But, I was expecting
it's like cash converters, isn't it? You send something in and you go, I really want to buy this back. But with somewhere like cash converters or a pawn shop, for a better phrase, there is always the, you know, in a certain amount of time, someone else might get the chance to buy it. So the pressure is on to make sure you've got the cash to go and get it.
But yeah, but with this chat, honestly thought clearly a serious, not the case. No, I honestly thought a serious player would buy that and use it like I did, because it is a serious guitar. It's quite rare. There's only about 1,500 of them. Of this particular model, and it's the one to get.
And they're certainly not going to reissue those, because
they're rubbish.
You can't get rosewood anymore.
No, exactly.
I mean, the original ones were Brazilian rosewood, which is extraordinary.
I mean, rare hen's teeth. Mm, yeah,
this thing was heavy. Well, no, this thing made Les Pauls. Yeah, I mean, this thing made Les Pauls light. You know, these really heavy guitars. But yeah, I will text him this week and see how that guitar is doing, actually. Yeah. James, what else? Anything else on your list, your eBay sellers history
list? It's funny, actually. I have just flicked through the sellers list and discovered that anything over 60 days gets wiped out anyway, so you can't see what it was. But I am reminded of a keyboard, a synthesizer keyboard that I sold, and it was when Julian started mentioning synthesizers, and I thought, do you know what? That is actually a massive regret, but not for the reasons you may at first think. I had a bright red Korg Karma, which was a great synth. Really, really cool. Very, very interesting. I really like that era of Korg stuff, from the Triton and the Trinities up to the Karmas and the new stuff. The Kronos is just a bit too advanced for my level of deep diving into synthesis. But this was a really, really cool synth. I really liked it, but it wasn't getting used. And because it's an electronic instrument, I thought, do you know what? I'm just going to push it on. I don't need it. I'll get shot. Sold it on eBay, wrapped it up in more bubble, and, you know, really, really, really did a very good job. I didn't have the original box. I bought this originally from eBay, and the guy actually came around and delivered it. Because he wasn't a million miles away. But I wrapped this up in more bubble than, I think, Big Yellow Storage don't have this much bubble wrap. It got to the chap. I sent it via TNT. And at this point, I am naming and shaming, because you know where this story goes. It got to him and he said, I'm really sorry, but it's damaged. And I went, really? He said, I can see you did an amazing job, but there are footprints on it, on the cardboard around the outside, and it's rattling. The key bed moves up and down inside the frame. The actual, like the plastic chassis of the thing has got chips out of it, like big plastic lumps had been chipped out of it. I need to send it back for a refund. I'm like, of course you do. I'm so sorry. Get it back to me and I'll refund you, no problem. So it came back and I cried, because I look after gear. If I'm selling it, I want it to go to someone who is also going to look after it. And to have some oath, gorilla, and I'm trying really hard to be polite with these words rather than what I actually thought and said at the time. What had happened is, it looked, say, clearly a size 11 boot had gone onto the keyboard, onto the actual key bed itself. And on the bottom of the key bed, there are legs every, you know, probably 10 to 15 centimetres. And every single leg had been snapped off. So there was nothing holding the key bed to the actual metalwork of the frame. And I glued them all back together, glued the case back together as best I could. And there's one dead key on it. So I thought, short of trying to get a new key bed secondhand, I'm just going to... In fact, I said to Jamie at my old band's keyboard player, I said, do you want it as a sound module? Because it's a really good keyboard. You'll use it because you'll have it. You'll plug it in via MIDI or whatever to other things. I'm never going to use this again, because I'm actually emotionally withdrawn from it now. I was so utterly frustrated. So that was one of those, I shouldn't have sold it, because it came back to me again in a worse state from which it left me. So I know it's a bit of a round the houses story to get there, but
a bit of a regrettable situation.
Yeah, I was so upset when I got it back. I was like, you know, it went for like, you know, 450, 500 quid. So it was a substantial amount of money to have to give back, but it left me absolutely A1 mint. And then, you know, I was just so...
Yeah.
Anyway, Julian, your last one, sir.
Oh, I've kind of run out, to be honest. But I mean, what I was thinking at the same time is, okay, if I had loads of gear, but basically, what gear have I come across unexpectedly that's kind of made me go, ooh, wow? And I was thinking about what I was saying about the irreplaceable gear. The stuff that either through rarity or through provenance is just kind of like, oh wow. And I mean, you know, we've been to places where there's lots of that stuff. You know, I mean, we've all been to Abbey Road, other kind of, you know, big studios like that, where that kind of stuff almost becomes kind of normal. You know, it's kind of like, oh yeah,
yeah.
But that's not a normal environment. And when you come across stuff like that out in the wild, it leaves a bit of an impression. I'm going slightly off piste here just because I don't have another, frankly. You know, I'm not going to say, oh, yeah, you know, I lost a plectrum once and, you know, it's a real shame though. Yeah. But do you remember, it was at Challow Park, which is a studio James and I visited a while ago, that was a lovely, impressive build and, extremely impressive thing. And just out of nowhere, when Will was showing us the gear, he pulled out a C12A. Do you remember that?
Do you know what? I knew you were going to say that. I absolutely knew you were going to say the C12A.
Really? Okay. Just because I'm not usually sort of starstruck by stuff. You know, it's not that I don't have that thing. It's just kind of like, okay, yeah, you know, people are in the world. Some of them I've heard of, and some of them kind of, you know, leave their mark on the world as they go. But that was used, do we know which album? But basically that was used for some very significant Kate Bush vocals. And I was like,
yes.
Oh, wow. And that absolutely had me like, God, imagine, you know. And yeah, you know, I mean, it's a C12A anyway, which is, if people don't know the C12A, it's the one that looks like a 414, but it's actually a C12. It's sort of, mid-60s.
It's not a C12 like you and I would think about it. It's not a sort of green and cylindrical and...
It looks like a 414 with a kind of extra tapery bit at the bottom.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's an amazing looking thing. But no, I just remembered sort of having this kind of like, Kate Bush. And yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And if that were mine, that is something that I would never sell. But dodging the question slightly there. But yeah, just one thing leading to another in my head. I don't know. Have we got some more? I bet you've got some more, James. Have you got any that aren't instruments or amplifiers? Because we've been going around instruments and amplifiers, and I mean,
yeah,
keyboards and whatever, but actually, come on, you know, microphones.
There's stuff I've had to give back that wasn't mine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I feel your pain there.
That's very much a different question.
Losing sleep over the delivery man coming the next day going, oh, I really want that, but I can't afford it. It's got to get back.
I had... a matched pair of vintage U87s that were on very permanent loan until the person came back from working on cruise ships. And one of the first things he said was, have you got those U87s still? To which my answer was, what would you say if I hadn't? Do you know, there's a few drums and things like that that I've got rid of over time. Drum kits, I mean, you know, a drum kit is something I get very attached to. It's not something you keep for only a couple of years. Do you know, I don't suffer that badly, because normally the reason I get rid of something is to get the next better thing, usually. I've been very lucky that I haven't been in that situation where I've had to sell a load of instruments or guitars or anything. I've never sold a guitar.
Wow.
Because I don't know. There's something about instruments. Selling a random drum or a drum kit is one thing. I mean, God, I could never. In fact, I told the guy I bought it from, I would never sell it. But I'd never sell the Only Fools and Horses snare drum, because that's, Julian, you mentioned provenance, and that's something that is incredibly special in my life and in my studio, and makes, you know, it makes what I do a bit different because I've got that instrument. You know, I've got some microphones that are special to me, and have a provenance, many of which I can't talk about because I've, again, sworn to secrecy. But I don't tend to, I try not to get too upset by it. I did have a pair of Dolby A processors, which became, once I got rid of them, the trick about running your BVs through a Dolby A processor to give them some separation came out, and I went, I've just got rid of those. So I was a little upset about that, but you know, this is a long time ago. God, that was before I went on cruise ships. I think I got rid of those, and then all of a sudden I got into this recording lark. So,
aren't you surprised nobody's made a Dolby plugin yet to recreate the sound of, you know, putting stuff through Dolby C and playing it back without it engaged or something?
Yeah, why is that?
Not necessarily good thing, but I just know I certainly used to do it. And, you know, I mean, there's been quite a few plugins brought out that I've gone, why do you want to plug into that? But people have made it anyway. So, yeah, there's one.
Very strange. If you've got any moments of seller's remorse, or if you've got, I think maybe another podcast is the tell us the one or the two things you would grab when you see your studio about to go up in smoke.
Fire extinguisher.
I think, yeah.
Keep saying it.
The fire extinguisher. I think that's one for another podcast. Let's park this one for now. And Dan, tell us about this month's competition.
Yes, win the 3 preamps you'll actually use bundle from Arturia, worth $299. The software plug-in preamp emulations are some of the finest available today. Try the 1973 Pre on vocals, the Tried A Pre on drums, or the V76 Pre on bass, and you will love their vintage character with modern features and low CPU load. To be in with the chance of winning this competition, follow the link in the podcast notes.
Pro Tools Expert Podcast is created using Source Connect Now from Source Elements. Register now for your free account at now.source-elements.com.
If you've ever tried to do interviews over the internet with apps like Skype, you'll know how hit and miss the audio quality and connection can be. And even on a good day, it isn't really good enough for a long-form interview. We now use Source Connect Now, which offers ISDN equivalent quality audio using a Chrome browser. No software to install. To get your free account, follow the link in the podcast notes.
Fantastic stuff. And I'm in the chair, so I'm going to say it's time for Find of the Week.
I'm going to loop that and just run it out for 5 minutes.
Just keep it in the, yeah, keep it going underneath the RSPE.
That would be lovely, yes. Just in case you hadn't realised, it's sponsored by RSPE Audio Solutions.
RSPE Audio carries nearly every great microphone you can think of, from budget to boutique. They have microphones from Sennheiser, Neumann, Earthworks, Shure, Lauten, Peluso, AKG Blue, Townsend Labs, Antelope, and many, many more. Not sure what mic you need? RSPE Audio team can help. Just tell them the work you do and they can recommend a few mics. Plus, if you're in LA, you can book a demo session so you can try some out for yourself before you buy. Shop online or contact their team to find the right mic for you.
I love the line in that says, not sure which mic you need. Surely the answer is all of them.
All of them. You would say that. And a locker to put them all in.
Yes, I would say that. Julian, tell us about your find of the week.
My find of the week's easy this week. It's the Sonox Oxford Drumgate, which I did some work on and put out some explanatory stuff. If you haven't checked it out, do check it out because I think it's brilliant. I mean, it is absolutely brilliant. I've had a few people. In fact, when I first saw it, I saw it a while ago. I said, hey, we've done a drum gate. And I went, nah, drum gate.
What do you think?
Gate's exciting. And they showed me theirs. And I went, oh, because I've always been somebody who prefers kind of actually take some sort of perverse pleasure out of trying to outwit my audio by setting up my gate exactly right to avoid those false triggers. But you can waste a long time doing that stuff. And you always end up spending 90% of the time chasing 2% of the drum hits that weren't quite play nice. Loads of people go, I'll just chop it out and strip silence or just manually edit out the thing. It's fine for some stuff, but, you know, busy snare part that's not going to work very well. This, it just sorts it all out. And, yeah, playing around with that, and you can generate drum triggers and you do, you know, augmentation or replacement with stuff from Drum VIs along with it. It's great. So check out the stuff. I really, really like it. Oh, and we're running a deal. We mentioned that. So, yeah. Check it out. It's not just a gate. It's a gate that works the way that they probably should, but never, ever do or did.
Cool. Dan.
Yes. Acusonus released a new plugin last week called Rhythmic, and it's a performance tool. You throw drum loops into it. It's got a bit of that regroover DNA in it, which can separate all the individual hits out of, you know, a bounced drum loop. And you can re-level them and re-perform them. And it's got a beat assistant in it, AI technology that can change the rhythmic nature of any parts of your loop. So let's say you want to change the hi-hat rhythm ever so slightly, whatever, or put some silence in or freeze the pattern. You do that click of a button. Everything's MIDI mappable. So encoders and key switching and things like that. It's absolutely brilliant. I've made a video. We should be publishing that in a few weeks. Check it out. If you're into your loops and drum loops and that, check this out. It is lots of fun. It's one of those videos I made, and it was 20 minutes long, and a lot of it is me not saying anything because I'm just playing with it. I've got to chop this down a little bit. I'm lost with all the fun. So yeah, check this out. I'm really excited. James, what's your find of the week?
You're expecting some kind of vintage, expensive, valve-driven piece of loveliness that's an absolute arm and a leg, aren't you?
Did you buy some?
Well, this week, you're wrong. I've gone very low rent. One of the things I really like about the modern recording environment is it's not all about big toys. The little things can make a huge difference. I found, via my buddy Mike Collins, so thanks for this, I was looking at a picture of his pedal board. I went, how did you do that? And he pointed me at a company called Barefoot Buttons. And what they are is they basically make large, oversized kind of caps for guitar pedal buttons. It's become very trendy these days to not actually have a pedal. You know, on the old Ibanez Tube Screamer, the pedal is quite a big thing. It's quite a wide piece of metal to put your foot on. However, these days, it's quite trendy to just have a little spiky thing that is very sensible, but if you play barefoot, and you'll see where they got this name from, it really hurts. And if you're wearing, or if you've got big feet, it can be quite difficult to get your feet right on the button so you hit it the right place. These are like really nice, kind of trendy, cool-looking milled caps that go on top of the pedals. They lock in via two Allen keys, and they're about $10 a pop. They do different heights, different sizes, different colours, so glow-in-the-dark ones.
I like them.
Really, yeah, glow-in-the-dark. Really cool idea.
Glow caps, they look very cool.
Yeah, barefootbuttons.com, B-A-R-E, foot buttons. Really cool. I should be ordering some because I just thought, what a brilliant thing.
This is the nice. This is the pedal equivalent of, you know, you used to see those landline phones with the massive buttons.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what it is, isn't it?
And I'm not, and on that moment of telephony, do you see what I did there?
Oh, stop it.
I know. You'd think You'd think we planned these things. It's time to end. So it's good night from me.
It's good night from me.
And it's good night from me.
Good night.